Our session this morning is Children Should Be Children in Play, Game, Sport, and Athletics. One might subtitle it Competition versus Compassion and Cooperation. I have a list of the books that I've used for reference and books that I'll be reading from to you. Read them all for the members of our tape audience. Every Kid Can Win is by Nelson. He is an Englishman who has worked with movement patterns for children and worked also in Canada with the new ice hockey leagues and soccer leagues for boys and girls, and developed a program based on skill learning as opposed to competitive development of the individuals. The new games book, and there are now two, one called More New Games, that is in the bookstore. The purpose of that really is to give you some helps in using non-competitive games with children and with adults that sort of bridges the gap between a highly competitive kind of activity and a more cooperative program with children and adults. The Ultimate Athlete is a book by a man named George Leonard, who believes that the word athletics has ruined our society in terms of individuals having fun in physical activity. And he would suggest that everyone can be and have the role of the ultimate athlete if you project for yourself your own goals, as opposed to having parents, coaches, teachers project what your goals are. The next two, I am making reference to it because I think it deals with our community here at Holden and gives us a view of the relationship between the all-important secular thing called sport in our society and a religious feeling. A Spirituality Named Compassion by Fox, and particularly I'm dealing with page 69 to 74. The book is in the bookstore, and that's the area of competition and versus compassion. Gifts of Grace by Mary Schramm, page 46 and 47. How many of you heard her talk last night or have heard it? Which section do you suppose I'm particularly interested in? It was a story near the end. Anybody recall the story on scoring? Well, obviously that's my interest in, among other things, of course, about her book. Then I've used four or five terms here, and throughout the lecture I'll define the terms as I use them, which gives you a picture of what I believe is significant in trying to deal with children today, both in terms of boys and in the future will be the same with girls, since girls have been asked to take on the boys' model of sport, as opposed to that boys and girls would take the best of both of their play lives and put them together. We were hoping on the varsity level of athletics, both in high school and college, that we could combine the best of the concept of sport and play that girls and women had had in the past and combine it with the highly competitive concept that the males have had in sport. But you will find as you read the newspaper, it has not happened. And one of the reasons it hasn't happened is that the males have taken over the role of coaches and administrators of sport programs for women. So, for example, on the high school level, there has been a drop in girl basketball coaches and a rise of 172% in men. And their experience yields that they would naturally go to a model that they understood. So I would say we're on the brink of failure in that process. Also, those of you who have looked on the collegiate level, there was an organization called the Association of Intercollegiate Athletics for Women, which has, as of today, in fact, as of September 1st, will be completely taken over by the NCAA, which is the National Collegiate Athletic Association for Men, and the Small College Association. We are in court at present about it on antitrust, meaning that we see men's athletics in Division I schools, which are the the known football and basketball schools is really the pros, and that therefore they have used pro money to take over women's athletics, which just gives you a view of what's happening lowering down to your kids. That what happens here determines what happens to you people. And that's why I'm interested in trying to think together a little bit about what really ought to be the role of physical activity for your children. Obviously, the role has been moving always towards this final athletics. And let me define each of these briefly, and then we'll talk about them. Play, I see, as what happens at Holden most of the time with your children. It is one of the most exciting places I've ever been for children. Children don't always think so, particularly the 9 through 12-year-olds, and then the junior high kids, because they have been programmed for highly competitive athletics. And so they're sometimes at loose ends on what in the world ought we to do today. Their concept is a concept of, let us get a baseball game going, a basketball game going, or touch football. Those are the three particular sports that they all know, all boys know, and soon all girls will know. And that's kind of what they're thinking about. And that's because their minds are running here. But if you watch the creative kids, or those of you who have taught your children to appreciate hiking, walking, doing things with you, biking, any of the kinds of family activities, your kids are perfectly happy here. And some that have never even experienced this kind of a freedom before are also happy. I see a lot of 5 to 10-year-old kids here just playing. They're not really doing what you would consider constructive play, but it's not destructive play. And I think that's what's significant about it. If you ask them what they did all day, they don't know. You know, they found a frog here. They went down to the lake here. They flew a kite over there. And they don't really know what they did, because you can't have them come home and say, did you win? I mean, that is the essence of sport when they come home. Did you win? And you don't have to ask your kids here. And that's what I call play. Spontaneous activity. That is, in fact, instinctive. It is instinctive in all animals. Dogs play. They don't look for the score. And children don't look for the score until you train them to look at the score. And they start at 2, seeing it on TV. And probably the first thing I would do if I had my choice is cut about 3/4 of the sports out of TV, at least some way making it impossible for anybody under 15 to watch it in sport. So that their concept is that you do this, you don't watch it. Now for us lazy adults, or for relaxation, I love sport. And unfortunately, I like the violence of football. And that's probably because I wasn't allowed violence as a female. And so I can vicariously love even the unethical pulling of the face mask, which is not nice, but it's true, of watching sport. Ice hockey is another example of violence that we permit our kids to watch on the television. And then they go out to play ice hockey, and we wonder why they're elbowing each other and pushing each other. That's what this TV does. So I'd like to some way get all of the sports on Wide World of Sport before the public. And not so much the score, but the actual just doing it. Here is a sport. Some of the new game idea, the pickleball game, balloon volleyball. Let the public see the kinds of physical activities. More racquetball, more tennis perhaps. Although tennis is probably the fastest dying game in our society. And part of that is the difficulty in learning the sport. Any kid 9 to 12 can learn to play tennis, but that's not when we give them tennis. We let them have all of the other sport first, and then we give them tennis in high school and college, and they're frustrated with the game. Tennis cannot be learned in one season, unless you really have been a good baseball player and you're able to take your throwing arm and put it into the serve. The side throw, which we hardly use now, occasionally the shortstop does, is what you really need for the forehand and backhand in tennis. And it helps that you can do things on your non-dominant side. But otherwise, it's not transferable, and so it's tough to learn. And I see the failure of tennis now as a failure of physical educators and everyone in the recreation field to have taught kids how to play a sport that's a lifetime sport. Archery is the same thing. It's a dying sport. And yet it is a good activity for self-testing. You don't need to be testing yourself against anybody else in the whole area. So play I see as pure, wholesome, and non-detrimental to any of us. Then we move to games. And notice I have an R for rules. And that's where Mary Schramm comes in. And just in case you weren't there or didn't notice the significant thing in this one. And what she's talking about is from Ann Herbert's parable about the problem of what she calls envy. But I call it the problem of sport, too. And it talks about being in the Garden of Eden. They are playing everywhere. We have lots of fun, they talk about. And then, at first, we did have fun, just like he expected. We played all the time. We rolled up the hills. We ran in the meadows. We frolicked. Then one day, this snake told us that we weren't having real fun because we weren't keeping score. Back then, we didn't know what score was. When he explained it, then we began to keep score. It was different after that. We yelled a lot. We had to make up new scoring rules for most of the games we played. Other games we had to give up because we couldn't find out how to score. By the time God found out about our new fun, we were spending about 45 minutes a day in actual playing and the rest of the time working out to score or watching it on television, parentheses. God said that this was not the way to have fun, and he kicked us out of the garden. But he was wrong. My cumulative all-game score is now 16,548, and that means a lot to me. If I can raise it to 20,000 before I die, I know I've accomplished something. Fun is great in its place, but without scoring, there's no reason for it. God has a very superficial view of life. And I'm glad my children are being raised away from that influence. And I think it's the very best commentary about games moving into sport and into athletics, that we're so busy making up the rules that they can't just enjoy and play the game. But games in themselves are not harmful. Even as I see it, competitive games are not harmful. We do know that our society is made up of competition, that in order to succeed in business, we probably are more competitive than compassionate or than cooperative. But if we have good parental teaching and good coaching along the line someplace, then games are useful. Not so much some of the low-organized games of duck, duck, goose, where you get approximately 21 seconds of play and the rest of the 30 minutes of physical education standing waiting for you to have your turn. And that's our fault, not your fault, in how we teach kids. But you need, as parents, to look at your physical education program to see if that's still happening in the games that they play. Games are unworthy physical activity games, that is, as far as I'm concerned, if a lot of physical activity doesn't happen. And I think it's up to you people to help see that that does happen in schools, and you certainly can do it in their recreational lives. Even some of the baseball games. In the Little League, I've timed one kid who is in for 4 innings, and if he runs out to the field, then I clock a little more activity. But if he walks out to the outfield, the maximum when he's up 3 times, say, that he can get is about 2.5 minutes of vigorous activity. And imagine what 2.5 minutes of vigorous activity does for your kid. Not very much. And yet you took him all the way across town so that he could do that. Now you're better off taking him to practice. Because in practice, unless he's really or she very, very poor, he or she will get more activity. But what you notice in practice, if some of you would go to practice instead of the games, you would see that your child may have only been up to bat twice if he or she is a strikeouter. They simply, some way or other, rotated around so that you're not up to bat. And what happens to the 8-year-old that happens to? What's going to happen to him when he's 12? He's not only going to not be in Little League, which isn't going to hurt him a bit, but he isn't going to be in sport, and that'll hurt him a lot. And it hurts every girl a lot, too, in the process of moving into abundant living. It simply takes a whole sphere of life that is terribly significant to our society and cuts them out of it. And the worst thing that you can do for a boy, what's the worst critical comment for a boy in our society? Sissy. There can be no worse stereotyping than to call a boy a sissy. And who's called a sissy? Maybe someone that's been injured and cried. But also if he doesn't want to try football. If he doesn't want to come and try soccer. In spite of the fact he has been ostracized by his own group and even more by a coach. Kids are not as bad, really, as coaches are in how to ostracize the kid. So games by themselves and begin to teach them cooperation and competition at exactly the same time is what makes for a balanced life. I obviously am very competitive. Had I been a boy, I'd have been a great football player, I just know. So as a girl, I had to be a great softball player in hiding, which meant I had to play in Chicago without my folks knowing it. Since I lived in Gary, 40 miles away, it wasn't easy. Until a flat tire brought out the fact that I was playing semi-pro softball in Chicago, which was my only place, really, for playing. And that's, of course, one of my sexist pleas is for opportunity. Moving from games to sport, I call sport now more highly organized, and that's the beginning of Little League, and where we might have officials in the activity, and where the score in Mary Schramm's book becomes even more significant, and the pride comes out of the play or out of the win? Question mark. The win. The win. And I was telling last year that when my nephew was young, he finally took up tennis instead of Little League, and went, played in a tennis tournament, came home, and I, first question, not even thinking, was, did you win? Well, my nephew said, well, no, Annie Jo, but I sure played well. Isn't that what you want? And he laughed. And that's just what our society has yielded. And as a coach, that really is on my mind. And according to the neighbors, he did play well. He played against the second seed. Never telling me who he had played against, but merely that he really thought he had played well. And that's where, therefore, it is fun. Even up here, I think, one of the exciting things, although it's very competitive, is to watch a really solid volleyball game. And the first thing we do is try to even up the sides. And if the sides aren't even, after two games, we switch. And so if winning were the only thing, we certainly wouldn't be switching sides. The winners would want to keep the same teams. But there is a competitiveness with the cooperation that occurs, even on the high level, and we were playing some high level volleyball this week, and we finally switched the teams, and when we could get it, some team won 14-16, then that's exactly where everybody wanted to be. And it was the good plays that even the other team was excited about. And I really don't know, as we mixed up, how many won how many games, but all of us were excited about the game when we finished. It took more skill, and so it was sport. But it was not on into athletics. But sport, as I perceive it, is also not a negative. But it's a skill learning experience. And that's, as I see it, what you need to deal with your children. Are they learning skills? And particularly your 9 through 12-year-olds. Because they can learn anything. I mean anything. Even the pole vault. And there are 46 separate movement patterns for pole vault. And I've seen 10-year-old boys particularly do it, though 10-year-old girls can do it with equal skill right then. When they're 13, they cannot. Our upper body strength does not increase as do the males. But the 15-year-old male can do it even better. But he can learn it at 10, 46 separate movement patterns, one of the most complicated in the world. Another most complicated sport is the serve in tennis. And all of you have seen 10 and 11-year-olds use the full serve, and off it goes. And you're using over 25 different movement patterns to get that ball exactly right, to get the racket exactly right, to get the wrist. And when they're going to learn that is when you put them into sport in a more recreational than competitive sense. And that's, I think, up to you to help them want to do that, to help them want to just play. As for me, I decided on my 40th birthday that was the end of practice. I would never again practice, and I haven't. Everything I do, I play. I don't want to be or can't be an expert in anything else. I never practice it. I always play. Now, the important thing, of course, is that the other guy wants to play too and score. I like to score. That's a part of my own heritage. And as long as I'm scoring and enjoying the game and it's fun, then I continue. I've got some days at noon when I play when it's not fun. If I play against one of the men that I really dislike, I don't play for fun. I really play for the belly button. And it comes out of a competitive spirit someplace that I think I missed along the way somewhere. But you'll see some of your kids who want to do that. They want to slide in and hit a kid. They don't try to avoid it. And that's where the competition becomes scarier than almost anything else that you find your children doing, is where they purposefully want to beat as opposed to wanting to win. I don't think anybody ought to go out saying, I really don't want to win today, because that's what sport is. Sport is a form of working towards your own greater self. And so you don't go out saying, well, I'm going to try to lose today. Although for women, it sometimes would have been better in the past. I might have been a Mrs. if I had done that. But then I'd have missed all my fun single life. And so I think you go out to win in sport. But remember, it's the skill learning that you're trying to get for your children, particularly those in that 9 through 12. But even on the junior high level, they're still learning. And remember the awkward change that both the boys and the girls have to go through when they could do it at 12 and they can't do it at 14 and a half. They lose some of their strength potential in that growth spurt, particularly boys do. They also lose some of their coordination even if you stay at it. The girls, on the other hand, will lose some of your running skills and your throwing skills, not only in the process of maturing, but you may never get it back. Some of your girls may never get back their ability to do the long jump because the pelvises change and the fatty tissue arrives. And it's pretty frustrating for some very athletic girls. And those of you that have athletic girls who have been free to grow and to play sport, remember that that junior high age is tough for them if they were highly skilled, equal with the boys, and suddenly they can't do it. It's a new frustration that you haven't had to experience with girls in the past. That will be true in the future. The girls simply cannot play on the same skill level as the boys or the athletic level in beyond that 12, 13-year-old. And it's frustrating for some of them. It'll be a new frustration that you haven't had to worry about with your girls. You just hoped that they would get some activity. Well, now they're getting it. And they simply will not be able to stay with the soccer players that they've been playing with all along, the baseball players into the softball players, where speed and strength are factors. Now, this doesn't mean you can't play coeducationally, but on the very top competitive level, you simply are not equal. And if you watch the top women basketball players and the top men, you can see it. It's a different game. Unfortunately, we haven't made it a different enough game. What we should have done is made the women's game finesse, and then it would have been a differing game. That's why volleyball is so successful with women, as I see it. Men haven't been great at it, and women use a lot of finesse. The net also is 6 inches lower. And so that's just about the average difference in height. And so if you watch a really good UCLA women's volleyball team, you're seeing better than you will see in 99% of the men's games. But your girls that grow into women must realize that in strength and speed, they won't catch up. So that when she could beat her brother, and I could, when I was 11 and my brother was 13, I could beat him in running. When my brother was 14 and I was 12, I was all lost. And it was a crushing experience for me. Then I had to go compete against my sister from then on. And that I succeeded in. Athletics then is what I call highly organized sport. And this is your varsity level, your first and second teams, and unfortunately, some of your little league turns into athletics. Any experience, horror stories on any of the athletic level that has interfered with either your children or others, just to get a feeling for some of the negative, and then we'll view some of the positive of that. Any stories on your children, or all of you have had pretty good experiences?
And this happened to my nephew in high school. His father is a coach, and so it's really about his father, but he moved to a new school. He had been an excellent baseball player in another school, and joined this team in his senior year. And for some reason, one of the players had not worn his uniform to the game, and the coach had Mike take his uniform off and give it to the kid who hadn't worn his. And Mike said, "You can have my uniform for the year." And, you know, it was devastating.
It really is saying, Mike, you're no good. And more important is Johnny.
I got started in athletics late. I started competing at about 10 and knew nothing and was behind. And I always got the feeling that I was no good. Fortunately, I was persistent enough and practiced and played, you know, with the neighborhood kids and everything, and later discovered that I was better than a lot of those kids that thought I was no good. But when you're not any good in an athletic program, you don't get the opportunity to develop either. You don't get the opportunity to, let's say, baseball pitch in a game situation. You just don't get those kinds of opportunities. I discovered later on that I could do those things, but at 10, 11, 12, I thought, well, all these kids are superior to me.
And what we do is put the kid farther and farther behind.
That's true.
No.
Well, I was going to say more from the positive aspect. Our youngest boy was in soccer from early in grade school on to beginning junior high. And the coach really brought each of the children. There were some children who had maybe some learning disabilities and were not coordinated athletically. And the excitement of the athletes to see them improve, and it was just a good personality building experience. And I'm so thankful that our boy was connected with a coach who, the score was not important, and he taught the kids some real good sportsmanship through this type of activity.
Yeah, and I have a son that's 9, he's played 2 years now, Little League. And in our area, there are 3 little leagues that he could have gone into. One of them is very highly competitive. And we happen to be in a neighborhood situation where the neighbors are quite good athletes, and the parents really promote that. I mean, that is the most important thing, is how good those kids are in athletics. And consequently, they are very good. And so my son wants to be and, you know, play with them and excel on their criteria level. But had a really good experience this last year, not in that competitive league, and one that is not quite the status league, but one in which the coaches were more concerned with the boys cooperating and learning individual skill levels than with the scores of the games. And consequently, there was a really good team spirit that was built within those kids. And you never heard anybody going, oh, you dummy, you struck out. It was, good cuts, and you'll be fine next time. And just, I think all of the kids on that team really came away with feeling that they were worthwhile.
Any other positives while we're on it? Or
I coach, and the first thing that I do is sit all the parents and kids down and say, there will be no negative comments about anybody on this team or on any team that we compete against. And there will be no negative comments from any kid on this team about any other player on this team. It's always, that's okay, we'll get them next time. And I've told the kids that and back it up by taking kids out of the game if they make a negative comment. And no matter how good that or important to the team that person may be, I think it's even more important that each kid have a good self-image. But also, I think one of the things that I've seen or felt as a coach is that the parents, you feel almost an obligation to the parents and the kids to make them competitive and make a winning team out of it. And I feel a lot of pressure about that as a coach.
I can say that now I don't have any kids play Little League, but I think one thing that would be important in a sport is also not always just not saying something, but also learning constructively how to maybe help a person make a better hit, or help, or maybe constructively help also to improve the performance. I think is another skill that would be something that I like. When I play a lot of tennis, I like someone to be able to say, "Are you watching the ball?" or something like that.
That's one of the new procedures that they're trying to work out in physical education, particularly with the new emphasis on co-education. Obviously, the males are superior in their knowledge of the sport. Girls, by virtue of their pink blankets, have been neglected in the sports world. And we know that by the new kinds of breaks and injuries and shin splints that are happening to girls who suddenly move into sport. You really need to start with the one-year-old treating the boys and the girls in physical activity exactly alike. There is absolutely no difference except that the coordination of the girl moves quicker in the 2.5 or 2 to 3-year-old than does the boy. But in their structure, in their muscles, in their entire physiological body, there is no difference between the male and the female in how much roughhousing, as it were, they can receive. But in the new co-educational setting, where the traditions has set that the culture has trained the boy, even if he didn't want it, to participate, and has kept the girl in and around the home and in activities which were not as vigorous. They were not tossed in the air as often and caught. They were not swung around in gymnastic-like activities as often, on the average, in the past. I hope in the future, and I think with the new revolution in sport, that it will happen. But what we're trying to do is to teach peer teaching in every one of the junior highs in our country. Now, by the time it gets to every school, it's going to be tough. But one of the projects that we had in a Women's Equity Act grant was this peer teaching. The boys really have a lot of knowledge, and knowledge you can't believe that the 9-year-old boy knows about sport, that the 9-year-old girl does not. And if you put them together and watch them, you can see. Kids can teach kids almost better than you as parents can teach your kid. It's tough. I've watched some fathers try to teach their daughters. They have decided it is time that we are going to treat them equally. But by the time they're 5, if you haven't already done it, they start to be lost to the cause, both with the interest of their friends, and it's just tough. You know, it's tough to teach your kids anything. They just automatically want no, except in some kind of respectful way. If a child has an awe of a sports skill, they might learn it, but they might also be hurt by it. So all of you might help your children to help others in a sport. And without they seem to be able to do it without a cockiness.
How does the kid do that, though? How does the child teach better than the adult? What do they do that's different?
I think they show them more and show them more. And we know that beginners learn best by seeing it, not by hearing it. What we do is talk them to death in explaining something.
And I guess what I'm asking, do they naturally break it down to a more simple element when you're trying to teach anything? You try to think what is going to be a simpler act that will lead to that final skill. At least that's what I try to do when I teach. Any sport, and do the kids just naturally do that? Take them back to a more simple thing, or do they just...
No, they don't. They start... Yeah. Just the peer help, but no, they don't get the fine details. Like, there are three essentials of this sport. What they do is just say, look, John, here's what you do. And they can also sometimes even look at the kid and say what he's doing wrong, which may be one part. Now, that's harder, but you can teach kids by how you taught them. And there's some generalized opposition. For example, I'm willing to bet my great salary here, which is a lot of food and a lot of fun, but I venture a guess that half of the third grade girls that you would observe are throwing with their right hands and stepping in with their right foot. Now, boys almost automatically are throwing in opposition. That is, as they throw, their left foot goes forward, and girls do not. And boys see that in girls and tell them.
Now, we've got twins, a boy and a girl, are 3 years old, and we have tried not to give them a sexist deal. At the earliest age, they were born in April. For Christmas, they were both given a truck by my brother-in-law. Brian sat at that thing for 2 hours playing with it, spinning the wheels, and he eventually got it rolling. And, just 8 months old, 7 months old. Kirsten looked at it, thought it was neat for about 5 minutes, and got rid of it. And they both were given some sort of a doll, a clown for Brian and Will. Baby for Kirsten, and boy, she just loved that, and she took off. That was it. But now they're both playing, a football. They were given a little football. Brian threw a perfect spiral the first time he threw it. He just had to hold it right, it just fit it in his hand, and he went back and he threw it. And Kirsten, and over and everything, and it's been the same way. Now, at 3 years old, he's been watching how you're playing.
Does
and
Kirsten...
he throws things a lot better than her.
Did her mother continuously throw it to her, or did her father?
No, and I did not throw it
to either one of them. One of the things is that two, they identify their sex as they watch TV, we're learning. And the boys automatically are watching the men play sports. And the girl has not seen a role model. If her mother happened to be very athletic, you probably would not see that difference, but kids are different. I got a ball, I learned just recently, a red rubber ball at 11 months, and that was the end of anything else for me. And I think my folks pretty well treated me like a girl, except that I followed my brother around, and whatever my brother did, I did. And whatever he threw, I threw. So there's still gonna be a lot of boys who like dolls and girls who don't. And some of it is still the reflection of society. Role modeling is one of the important aspects that you women need to worry about. I don't want you teaching your little girls how to throw until Dad has taught them. But once Dad has taught them, it would be nice if you threw too. Now, about half of you are going to throw, about half adult women will throw, quote, like girls. There is something, if you didn't learn it very young, in our upper body strength and our pectoralis major and minor muscles that leads to that, and a lack of observation of Daddy. You just don't identify with how Daddy's throwing the ball because you're different. But if you learned all the way along, then I'd love, really, mother to teach both the boy and the girl, but particularly the girl. The boy, on the other hand, ignores the mother some. Although we have one study that I think is important for you to know about. Sixth graders after the Second World War happened to be tested for throwing. It really was just a distance throw, but they took pictures of it. And when they ran the films through, they saw all these sixth grade boys throwing, as it were, like a girl. In studying it, what they found is between 2 and 4, all of those boys' fathers were in the service. And the woman, taking the role of the father like she ought, had taught them how to throw. And the reflection of the throw was elbow leading and throw. They're now doing some studies in California, by the way, on divorced women who have been single family to see if that same effect. They're not finding it exactly, partly television, partly the understanding that women have of the need for a role model. But the role model aspect is terribly significant. And I don't think every girl ought to be an athlete, or every boy an athlete. But what I think is that they all should have had a chance in case that's what they wanted. I think they ought to have music and drama, too, in case that's what they want. Now, they're going to want sport more just because our society, they see it more. And our society is spending billions and millions of dollars on sport. And so they're much more exposed to it. Somebody here had a...
When my daughter was younger, I attempted to go out and teach her to throw and things like that, as I did my boy. And she just was not interested at all. Now she's 10, her older brother's 12, and the younger brother's 7. And we've gone out into the yard and devised a game where we take a big ball that everybody can hit and a bat and put out some bases and devise and make the rules for the game so that everybody can compete or can play the game successfully together. Me and the boys and my daughter.
And, I'll get and the mother?
Play the game. I can't get her out there.
And the mother? And the mother?
But we can get out there and play a successful game where everybody can in their own way, do the job. And my daughter's coordination or ability has improved quite a bit.
As they have games and the same kinds of opportunities for girls, then I don't think it will be quite as important that mother does it. But this transitional time, it really would help if mother was a part of it. And for boys, sometimes I think it would be better for boys if father weren't an athlete. That it's almost a handicap for the boys if dad is highly skilled and they either have no interest or they are not. So those of you who are highly skilled men and your boys are not, remember that it is not the end all, but that there is some sport that he's going to like if you can just help him find it. And I think that's what's also important in looking at your younger children, is expose them to a whole lot of activities, from the gymnastics to the modern dance to the football to the basketball to tennis to badminton to hiking to bicycling to cross country, to as many sports as you can afford to expose them to, so that out of that they can find what they want.
As I was thinking of the gymnastics, could you tell us some things that you kind of have to watch out for? I have a little girl who seemed to kind of take to gymnastics, and I put her in a program that I felt, but I'm not sure I was right, seemed to be so much emphasis on the competition and stuff, and I was worried about injury and stuff. Is that something you do have to watch out for, even when they're little?
Oh, definitely, both for the boys and the girls. Look what's happened to little league baseball pitchers. They have ruined more little boys' arms. The joints, remember the muscles or the bone has not completed its growth pattern. And that's for both girls and for boys. For girls, the care that you need to take is, what are they doing with their backs?
Okay.
Are they having an awful lot of back bend kind of experiences? And be sure that her abdomen is as strong as her back. And if they don't give her exercises for the abdomen, you want to strengthen her abdomen. That is the most important point for any of you who have back trouble, is that you strengthen your abdomen. The problem is you don't strengthen it by putting your legs up and lowering them like they have everybody do, because it pulls your back off the floor and you're trying to do the activity that you don't have the strength for. And the problem with highly competitive gymnastics for girls is exactly the same thing that's happening for boys in Little League. they have moved to being so interested in competition for girls in gymnastics that you begin to need to take exactly the same care about how much they're pushing them, how much they like it, and to be sure that there is spotting going on, and when the girl wants to stop and rest, that she has the right. And I've seen gymnastic programs where the girl isn't given any rights. And that's when you move into highly competitive athletics about the rights of your kids for world-class athletes, which is the next big problem, is rights of kids in sport.
Yeah. What I wanted to ask about that, the gal, when I took her out, was upset with me because she said that kids, you know, they need to be pushed and stuff and they won't stand a chance later on if you don't allow them this when they're really little, and I'm talking about like a four-year-old. Is that true? Or if they're in other programs where they're physically active and stuff, can they still choose it, like say at 13 or 14 or whatever, and still do all right
nope.
on it?
No. You can't pick hardly any sport beyond 12 and become a world-class athlete. This means you and your children have to make decisions by between 8 and 12 years old whether they are going to be world-class athletes. And you look at world-class athletes, and that when it occurs. But it's no more serious than a violinist deciding, a piano kid deciding, a voice child deciding. But that was my next point, was the pros, which is really near world-class athletes, is that all of you right now have to start to make decisions about sport in your children. And whether you're going to work for the four-year scholarship, which is the ultimate, which I still call pros, for your child, or you will not. And girls now are going to have to make that same decision. How much do you want to sacrifice for the pursuit of excellence? And I think that kids and you have a perfect right to decide that you want to be world-class athletes. But there is a price. And the price is starting young and devoting a lot of your time. And it's well worth it. Some of our athletes say, both males and females, it absolutely was worth it. Not only for the college education, but for the exposure and the excitement. Remember that the physical abilities of males and females are God-given gifts, the same as any other gift that you have. And you have to help your child make a decision. Now, there have been exceptions, particularly in the female, because we don't have a broad base of kinds of professionals. Like, there's some women that are playing professional basketball who have gotten four-year scholarships who didn't start until they were 14 or 15. There's a few football players that didn't grow until they were juniors, and so on. But one of the things that they do have to have is general activity, and then they might be able to pick it up later. But there is no such thing as general motor ability or transfer of skill or sport from one to the other. I can be a great tennis player and a terrible badminton player. I can even be a great squash player and not become a great racquetball player. Great football players are not great basketball players. Now, great baseball players are great softball players. And you may transfer that to golf, by the way. And there are some individual sport skills that transfer. But it's specificity of activity. And that's why you need to expose them to a lot of sports if you want them to do a lot. But the world-class athlete decision, some of you are going to have to be making pretty soon. And I don't have any guidelines except that the kid wants to do it.
This, I think, is precisely where the problem comes into athletics. I work with a figure skating club, and I'm well aware of what happens to the kids. I guess a little bit of it comes in there that sports have become more of a spectator type of thing, particularly when you get better, than at the beginning. But so oftentimes is what happens, that it is the parents who are trying to push a kid that is not really cut out, or really doesn't even want to be that world-class athlete, and almost destroys the poor person. I have seen, for instance, girls and also fellas in the figure skating come off the ice crying and as though their world has ended because they made one or two mistakes. And this comes, and I think this is where the real problem comes, where the whole athletic concept and the sports concept and play concept disintegrates at this point, is because we think that our kid is going to be, you know, on television and going to be up in the top. And it, and it's the parents, really, that are doing this. Almost, I sometimes see it. The Romans used to feed the early Christians to the lions and burn them in torches. Now, I see the parents sitting around and the kids in there trying to almost feed them to the lions because they're going to be world athletes. I think this is where the problem comes.
That's the very first thing to look at. Do the children want to do it? Remember, children are not miniature adults. Children are children. And it's the child that has to want to make the sacrifice. But the problem is that there's got to find out whether the child really wants it, or if the child cares so much for the parents that they want to please the parents. And that's what you have to find out, is are they just pleasing me? We had a world-class athlete in a swimmer who quit at 14 after having been to one of the Olympics, because she had been pushed all along the way and she really didn't want it. Gymnasts quit at 13 and 14 in our country. I think the scariest story that I have heard in the communistic countries about sport is that children have been taken away from their homes at 4 and 5 to become world-class athletes, and at the very latest at 8. All of the tests which we now can give to predict motor ability, they give to these children. And if they pass the test and the psychological test, it's thank you very much, and off to the private schools we go. And we have to be careful in this country that the pro or the Olympic becomes the end all for sport. And it's more difficult to deal with than the violinist, really, because we've got so many more of them. And there are so many more sports to make your choices. Girls have been free of that. It's sort of like two-edged swords. For our opportunity, we have to start making those same decisions.
In the media and everything, we mainly see only the success stories of people who make it. But I can remember friends from high school who were very, very good athletes and just did not have the ability to make it at the college level. And it was devastating for them, for their whole lives. It turned them into being a great success, from a great success into somewhat of a failure. And I think that's a real danger in trying to...
I think that failure syndrome is one of the most difficult for you to deal with. If we really want a view of this in society, look at the black basketball player. The way out of the ghettos, said the sociologist and everybody throughout the 50s and 60s, is become a basketball player. And so all energies in the ghetto and in many of the inner cities has not been get educated well so that you can be a doctor, a lawyer, a great mechanic, a great electrician, a great bricklayer, and make a good living and get out of the ghetto. It has been do not be a laborer, but be a basketball player. And it will take you through college, forgetting that the academic is first essential, even for the college. Not all colleges, of course. Because how many graduate of the black athletes graduate generally from the Division I schools? Any of you know? Maximum 45% of those black athletes will graduate. And of those, 1.5% will be great athletes. In other words, that they will make their living as a pro. And their whole lives have been spent in preparation for that. One of my grad students, a black graduate student, teaches at a junior college. And he used to send his black athletes off to Jamestown, Minnesota, to be basketball players. Can you imagine two black athletes in North Dakota, Jamestown, North Dakota, trying to be athletes? And four of them came home within a two-year span, and he suddenly realized the difficulty of the task that he had set for himself of sending them out to have good experience when they were homesick, they couldn't do the work. They were inner-city black kids who had gone to Chesapeake, which is a college that accepts and has a lot of blacks, a lot of individual attention for them. But it's the same idea on a larger basis of failure. And you can find probably 20% of our high school football players in the same position. They couldn't get scholarships to the large schools. They didn't want to go to the small ones. And so their concept was always sport as opposed to education for whatever you wanted to do. And that's another same idea as the figure skating. That if you're going to set that goal, one, you have to be sure they can do it in some ways, but two, that there has to be another thing that they can do with their lives, that they have more gifts than the physical. And the amount of energy that they put into that, they could put it into almost anything. If we spend as much time with some of our athletes being scholars, that's in fact what they would be. Or if we were trying to make them almost any profession, they could do it, any apprenticeship, by the amount of time that they devote to athletics. That's one thing they're learning about girls and women, that they didn't realize the cost to be an athlete on the college level, and they simply are quitting. They still are allowed to quit. Can you imagine a great, successful sophomore in college male athlete having a right to say, well, coach, I've decided I don't want to play. It's too much work. The pressure would be tremendous.
A prime example from Washington, Mackey. He came from Texas and back there, and now he's back in Oklahoma, and he just put football back there. And he's frustrated. He's lost. Yeah. The pressure is too much for him, so he quit. And now the coaches, and it was in all the national papers, sure. The coaches are saying, well, he just couldn't stand the competition to make the first team. He didn't want to work on
it. It really has all kinds of negative possibilities. But I think the important thing to remember is if you keep trying to go in this direction rather than that direction, so that we are really moving not so much to the pros, athletics, sport, games, but towards the play, but always with that they are learning something. And finally, the whole reason for children to play, to have games, to have sport, or to move into high-level competition is to have fun. And when they're ceasing to have fun, then I think it's time for the parent to move in and help them to find ways to have fun. Not that it's not educational, or that they can't learn self-discipline, cooperation, even character building if we have good coaches, but that it also can have a detrimental effect if we aren't really careful with the whole happening. I have one more question.
Do you have any comments on the grading systems in the schools at the, in the phys ed programs and so forth?
Yes, it starts with an A for awful.
Yeah, well, this is how I feel too.
As are many of the programs, primarily because they're not grading on the same system as with every other academic happening. Now, I see physical education, for example, as not only fun at all. I don't care as much if they come in and while they're learning, they're having fun, as that they go out and have fun. And so I think that the grading system ought to be the same as in any other area, in that you have beginners and you teach them something and they learn it. They learn strategy, they learn rules, they learn safety, and you test them on it, and that you have taught them skill. The problem is the teacher doesn't teach, and then the student is handicapped by it. See, I don't think physical education has to be all fun. I think physical education is a learning experience that if it's taught well, the students have fun while they're learning. But it is not throwing out the ball and then grading them on whether they have clean clothes or not. And sort of a general attitude of where they are, or that all athletes get A's just automatically, or they get excused from it. It's the last thing that should happen to great athletes in football, that they are excused from badminton and tennis and softball and volleyball and cross country or anything else that they can work with. But I think our physical educators have been more interested in athletics than in teaching boys and girls physical education. And I think that is changing with the younger generation, if they get a chance. It's tough in the 10-year world for them to get a chance and an opportunity. But we've got some fine young physical educators going out, and they have learned more the evaluative process. And so I think care has to be taken. But that together with parents and the school, that we can make sport and activity a better happening for the children, for both the boys and for the girls. And that's my final thought process, is fun and a happy experience for the boys and girls, that they may use it then and later for abundant living.
System that the grading is actually based, well, it was based almost entirely on skill, and I mean real skill. My son is what I would call a top athlete, and yet even at his level he was getting B's and C pluses and nobody was getting A's. Now they have finally gone to 20% for the rules of the game, 20% for sportsmanship, and then still the last 60, or you know, the last percentage there is on actual skill. Like in cross country running, they would be timed, and they had an almost unattainable level for an A.
Well, it's the same as in any academic world in terms of where the teacher selects to put the standard.
Yeah.
But as long as skill improvement is one of the objectives and it's attainable, yeah, it's more difficult, yeah, then it has a perfect place within the academic school system. The percentages you might want to deal with, but a skill is a part of physical education, just as being able to draw is a part of an art class, but it is not the overall. The problem with the relevancy of being able to judge sportsmanship, more significant probably is the strategy of the game. Are they attempting to use the strategies of the game? Are they using the cooperative? And you can judge some of that. And you can also deal with the rules. But I am in favor of part of the grade being on skill development, because that's the function of the teacher and the behavioral objectives of physical education. It is time for you to get your children, who are off in free play, I hope.